Good morning. Capital Investment Division will come to order on Thursday, March 28th. Representative Lee, there's a quorum here, so we could have your motion.
Madam Chair, move approval of the minutes for Wednesday, March 27, 2019.
Okay. The minutes are before you. All in favor of the motion to accept the minutes as printed, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
The motion is adopted. No.
You didn't ask for the name.
I did not. The next step. We've had a lot of preliminary work. We started with a spreadsheet from the payments that the Capital Investment Committee has appropriated to local communities and across the state from 2000 to 2018. We heard about stories about local projects and regional projects and state projects that impressed all of you members, and many people from the audience contributed their stories of the influence and importance of the capital investments to the people of the state of Minnesota. And we realize more and more, I think every day, how the people are affected by our actions and by our investments. And we heard many stories when the people came before us in our many meetings and additional meetings so that we could get all the bills that had been introduced up to yesterday. And I thought we had them all. But there were seven more introduced yesterday. But I invite those seven authors to go to the MMB site and find out how their projects can get first dibs on the appropriations money that's decided on in 2020. Because the MMB, who testified before us at the beginning of the year, did tell us about their procedure, and that procedure includes the need, and that it has to be regional, and that they ask all kinds of questions, and those questions all have to be answered whether you do it ahead of time or whether you're doing it between now and June. Or even after the passage of this 2019 bill that we're thinking about putting together today and tomorrow and this month and next month. But we do have to be done with a proposal if we're going to have a proposal, and that we have to have it done and out of this committee by the third deadline, April 12th. And so today is the next step in getting to that point. But before we get to that, we have a few minutes, about 20, to review some issues that have not yet been answered. And we've asked people to come and address these issues, not in their entirety, certainly, but at least to remind us that we haven't discussed these yet at all, and they are important parts of the spreadsheet. And I've asked Andrew Lee, our fiscal analyst, to again remind us of what debt service is. Mr. Lee.
Madam Chair and members, if you look in your packets, you'll have a one-page landscape spreadsheet that looks like this. It is labeled General Fund Debt Service. So just very briefly, the Capital Investment Committee account includes debt service for GO obligation bonds or general obligation bonds, as well as the various appropriation bonds that the state's issued in the past. In your spreadsheet, you'll see lines 3 through 11, or sorry, 3 through 10 are the debt service statutory appropriations for appropriation bonds. And you can see all the ones. These are, unless it's bold and italicized, these are all existing obligations. And then on line 11, you can see the governor's recommendation for general fund spending. You can see that in the box on the far right-hand side is the governor's spending from the general fund for capital projects at $1.92 million in fiscal 2020. Then on line 15 and 16, 15 is the debt service for the previously authorized geo bonding. And then on line 16 is the increase in debt service needed to accommodate the governor's recommendation for a bonding bill. Going down to the bottom of the sheet, there's a box that says House Target March 25th, 2019. This is the math that adds up to the House Target that was introduced on Monday. It allows for debt service for a $1.602 billion in GO bonds. Now, part of that includes the $102 million that was already authorized this session in Chapter 2. And then there's an additional $10 million in general fund spending that you can see on line 25 in that box for capital projects spent out of the general fund. And so you can see on line 26 and 27 the biennial general fund target for the committee and how that matches with the House budget resolution. One quick thing that I'll note is going back to the appropriation bonds under the governor's recommendation on line 4, you'll see additional appropriation bonds for MHFA. These would be authorized this year. The governor's recommendation is $120 million, but the cash flowing of the projects and the debt service would only start in fiscal 2023 and increase in years after that.
Very good. Are there any questions? Thank you, Mr. Lee. Is Ryan Baumtrog here? Or someone from Minnesota Housing Finance Agency?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I'm Dan Kitzberger. I'm the legislative director with Minnesota Housing. Assistant Commissioner Baumtrog is en route. So I thought I might just kind of start off, and then he'll help contribute once he arrives.
Thank you.
Madam Chair, members, we were asked today just to provide kind of a timeline and a process for how additional authorization per the governor's recommendation would play out over the next few years, mm-hmm. In addition to how the existing bonding authority we have will be issued and distributed. So with this year's competitive RFP process, which actually opens in April, Minnesota Housing anticipates receiving a significant number and amount of requests for funding not just in terms of the number of requests we received, but for the dollar amounts of those requests. Accordingly, we expect to select projects that will utilize the remaining approximately $60 million in existing bonding authority that the legislature has provided that hasn't already been targeted for previously selected projects. The legislature authorized three new uses last year. Those uses included senior housing, so that's housing for households age 55 and older with area median incomes of up to 50%, along with a $30 million set aside for households with behavioral health needs. And the third use was manufactured home park infrastructure, so that's the street sewer, not the structures themselves. So we spent we awarded about $8 million of that behavioral health set aside. So a little more than a third of that remaining $60 million in authorization is dedicated for that behavioral health use. So as far as the upcoming timeline, we plan to select as many viable projects as possible with this year's RFP within the available authorizations that are existing. As I mentioned, there were those three new uses added, and we do anticipate more requests than ever just based on conversations we're having with our stakeholders and sort of the developer community. The projects from the RFP will be selected in October of this year, and without additional new HIB authorization, Minnesota Housing anticipates not being able to select as many viable projects as we otherwise would. This program is already oversubscribed by about 3-1. In September of this year, we anticipate issuing additional housing infrastructure bonds to finance those previously selected projects, so about $38 million of those, and largely using the existing authorization from the 2017 session. This is a case where projects were selected within and financed within 2 years. So for the projects Minnesota Housing selects in October, from this year's RFP, the agency anticipates beginning to issue bonds in the fall of next year, assuming that the projects are ready to move ahead and be financed. Since the agency has authorized but unissued bonds from the 2017 authorization, those would be used first, and additional bonds would be issued in the fall of 2021. Any remaining housing infrastructure bond authorization after this year's RFP may be available and awarded to projects throughout the year. And Minnesota Housing will make it clear to communities and developers that those housing infrastructure bond proceeds will be available for the 2020 competitive process that will start about this time next year. So for projects that Minnesota Housing selects after this year's RFP, bonds will likely be issued in the fall of 2022. And as we allow project readiness to catch up with timelines related to the state's general obligation issuance, the debt service would start in the fiscal year 2023, and that's per MMB rules. So subject to the timing considerations of the state's GO bond issuances, Minnesota Housing issues housing infrastructure bonds as projects already selected and are ready to be financed. We try to limit the amount and duration of issuing housing infrastructure bonds in advance of project readiness. Therefore, Minnesota Housing needs additional authority to select projects now. But since we only issue when ready, we only need the debt service when the cash for those projects is actually needed. So some of the factors impacting our issuance include the pipeline and readiness of projects. As I mentioned, we're oversubscribed in this program by about 3-1. There is a pipeline that's involved, so we do turn away projects every year, and those projects often come back and resubmit. The financing and construction of the timeline of each project. So, for example, sometimes the agency provides end loans, so that means we're the last dollar to sort of finance the remaining gap within a project. And the state currently only issues GO bonds once a year, and we need their financial information as part of the underlying continuing disclosure arrangements between the state and the agency that are necessary for the issuance of those housing infrastructure bonds. So without any additional housing infrastructure bond authority this session, we'll likely not be able to fund eligible requests we receive, or we anticipate we're going to receive. And projects that look for housing infrastructure bond financing will have significant uncertainty about whether or not the agency will have housing infrastructure bonds available for the 2020 RFP. which will likely stop projects from seeking local approval and slow the pace of housing development throughout the state. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee might have.
So our, Mr. Kitzenberger, so our responsibility just ends if we want to meet all your goals of meeting the application. Then we have to appropriate the $30 million. Mr. Bomprog, welcome.
Chair Murphy, members of the committee, sorry, I was a little late with a family issue this morning, so my apologies. Could you please restate the question about the $30
million? He says it's 3-1. You get 3-1 correct applications that you can deal with, correct, and to deal with the money that has already been appropriated plus the new requests that are going to be coming in,
right,
you need a sum of money, and our role is just to determine what that sum of money is going to be that you can try to meet your needs, but we won't fulfill all those needs even if we reach the governor's requests.
Chair Murphy, certainly that's true. The needs for affordable housing across the state exceed any amount that could be appropriated this year, along with the fact that projects need a little time to come together. And so what we need from the legislature and what we're seeking in the governor's recommendations is additional authority so that we can select as many projects as possible. We anticipate, as Mr. Kitzberger said, that we will run out of authority that the legislature has provided to select projects. And then what we seek from the legislature is the timing on the debt service. So we want to give certainty to the projects with financing that the resources will be there, but then there's a delay on when the debt service is actually appropriated to the agency. That depends on when we issue the bonds at Minnesota Housing, which is on a project-by-project basis, and on the backs of when MMB issues general obligation bonds, because we need the state's finances because they're appropriation bonds.
Thank you.
I did
not have that clarification before, and I appreciate that a lot. Great. Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess it just gets a little bit blurry in my conceptual understanding of this, and so pardon my sophomore question, if you will. In some ways, it feels like we're not funding specific projects and that we're just giving dollars to a budget that's allocated towards being spent on future housing projects. And I guess intellectually my head around that as I understand what we're supposed to be doing within this committee, that seems a little bit outside the scope of what we do, except again they are specific state infrastructure investments on specific types of projects. Sure. And I guess I'd like a little bit of an explanation, and just to make sure we're not running our committee away from the mission and doing anything that would have a negative impact on how bonds are sold and whether or not these all fit right within the parameters of what we're actually supposed to be doing in projects.
Mr. Bomprog.
Chair Murphy, Representative, thanks for the question. I'd say what Minnesota Housing does might be a little different than some of the agencies that you finance or that you appropriate resources to, in that we need the authority in order to select, and then we actually issue the debt, which just makes us different than I think most of the other state agencies you hear from, who might have priority lists for clean water or just have their queue or roads and bridges. They have the projects identified. Ours is a little different in that we need the authority, and then we select competitive process via a competitive RFP. So we want to make sure that the projects are ready, that there's other financing in place, and so we don't commit to a project until, one, we know that there are resources, and then we want it to be a truly competitive process so we can look at the range of projects that are financed with housing infrastructure bonds, which is preservation, permanent supportive housing for those experiencing homelessness, land trusts, senior housing, manufactured housing. It gives us the ability to work with the stakeholders in the different communities to meet all of those needs with additional other capital resources that the agency provides in our competitive RFP. So it is a little bit different, and it's really different that we at the agency actually issue debt to finance projects. I think other agencies, they're not issuing debt for the most part. Minnesota Management and Budget issues debt on behalf of those projects. So there's a couple things that make us, I think, unique with our request.
Representative Pearson.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I really, that's very helpful. You know, you mentioned housing preservation. Is there someone that's making sure you're falling within the parameters of where these dollars are supposed to be spent? You know, as it pertains to housing preservation, again, we have pretty narrow scope of, I mean, sometimes we're hearing things in here and we find out, oh, wait, we can't actually spend dollars on the security systems or something like that that you normally would think would fall within the parameters of bonding, but they actually don't. So who, it's within your own agency that you monitor that, or who else kind of makes sure that those dollars are being spent appropriately?
Chair Murphy, Representative, we'd be happy to show a map of our preservation deals and what they're funding. We, through our application process, have a pretty specific what it means to meet preserving federally assisted rental housing, and it has to be rental housing that's seriously deteriorated or at risk of being lost, and that's where we focus our preservation, is where the federal government financed buildings back in the 60s and 70s. They're in communities across the state, and they're really tired buildings, and so we inject some resources that then extends the federal assistance for about 20 years. So it's a pretty prescribed process of how we work with the owners of those buildings and communities to save those projects across the state.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for asking that question, Representative Pearson. Any other questions? Representative Salk.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. Maybe I have it wrong in terms of where the money goes and which allocations go where in your global mission. So what part of you deals with funding, or how does the money flow through that goes to things like facilitating the lower income qualifying or higher risk loans in the purchase market? Because there's a big chunk of the purchase market that really relies on that liquidity at the bottom of the market in terms of price ranges and that sort of thing. So we got the normal market that people just buy, get loans, then we've got FHA, then we've got VA, then we have MFHA is always stepping in to kind of help make the market so that we can move through that lower price range. And I think that's a very responsible place to know how much capacity you have to do that and how much the market and or home ownership and prices and all that are going to be vulnerable to how much you have in your sack of money. Because in the end, if you stop coming to the window, then the whole market seizes for a little while. And we've been through that a few years ago, and it wasn't pleasant. So I was just curious your take on that in terms of your money sources. And maybe it's not from this that would go to that.
Mr. Baumtrog.
Chair Murphy, Representative Salk, thanks for the question. I think you're getting at probably overall all of the financing that the agency does. Certainly housing infrastructure bonds plays a role where, but for the legislature authorizing it, we don't have the authority to issue the bonds, which means we don't have the authority and the resources to preserve the projects, to build supportive housing. I mean, the resources, the gap resources that we bring to deals that have a mix of financing from federal, Freddie Mac, Fannie Mae, other financing, but it's the state's resources that really fills the gap and makes the projects actually work. And so without these, projects aren't viable, and then they risk deterioration. And one of the things I think we can follow up with you specifically is kind of what we do outside of these resources and some of the gaps there. Certainly as we're seeing the market and extremely low vacancy rates and the loss of some properties that aren't federally assisted. That's an issue we're seeing statewide, that we're looking for more opportunities, not through housing infrastructure bonds, but other resources to preserve those properties too.
Thank you.
And so, Mr. Brautenprag, the agency that oversights your agency is mainly MMB and the federal government?
So Minnesota Housing has we're a component unit of the state, technically, and we have we're legally separate from the state. So when we were established over 40 years ago, that was the decision at the time to legally separate us from the state so that our debt and our issuance wasn't commingled with the state. And so we have an independent board that's established in statute to oversee and really controls the power that's vested in the agency.
Thank you. Thank you very much for coming before us.
Yeah, I apologize. My apologies for being late this morning, but Dan's great, and everything he said was right.
Yes, because they were your notes, right?
Exactly, Madam Chair. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, and thank you, Mr. Kitzenberger. MnDOT. Mr. Peterson. Thank you, Mr. Peterson, for volunteering to be here today. And we had projects, especially yesterday, in the morning and in the evening, that were kind of local projects and seemed to be outside of the list that DOT kind of has, or they wanted to finish something up, or you don't have actual places, maybe, but there's projects that are before us to consider that are more local in nature than state highways and trunk highways. And we didn't have any, well, we had seven bridges yesterday, but that was in a Parks and Trails bill. So how does all these local things fit in with the overall umbrella of the Department of Transportation and the requests for the local projects? You were here too, and so you heard about them.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Scott Peterson from MnDOT. I'm not sure exactly which projects you're referring to. I do have a list that the committee administrator provided. Just kind of looking through these projects, quite often local communities have interest in building transportation infrastructure that affects the trunk highway system or crosses a trunk highway system, and we work with them to develop a project that doesn't damage or increase the effectiveness of the trunk highway system. But these are things that are primarily on the local road system, or might be like pedestrian access or bicycle trails. And so, we don't typically take a position on those, or whether they're favorable or, unfavorable, unless they're unless they intend to, like, tap into trunk highway funds that we don't have and, that we haven't identified in the program for these projects. If you have some of the projects on the list that I was just reviewing, it seems to me that the local governments have been working pretty closely with MnDOT on these. I haven't seen anywhere there's a concern expressed about the improvements that are being proposed to be funded on the list, unless you have unless you have a particular project in mind that you have questions about.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Mr. Peterson. The one project that I think the chair may have been touching on is the Annandale project, where we have Trunk Highway 24 and 55 both being done at virtually the same time, which is causing a bit of consternation within the city. And why they are trying to seek additional funds to help out with this project. Are you aware of that, or is it common practice to schedule two projects either overlapping or one right after another?
Mr. Peterson.
Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl, unfortunately, I'm not familiar with that situation with those projects. I would say it's not common to schedule project at the same time. Usually we put a lot of effort into trying to do some analysis of the impact of, you know, road closures associated with construction, which usually means, you know, making sure there are alternative routes for people to use. But I would say if in this instance both projects are going on, the evidence must have pointed to the ability for travelers to use other alternative routes to, you know, that, and so there might be some efficiencies associated with undertaking these projects at the same time. I'm just not familiar enough to give you any insight, I'm afraid. I don't think I have that particular project on my list here unless I'm missing it.
Madam Chair.
Representative Erdahl.
I believe it's starting in 2020. And we'll be going for about 3 years. And again, it's without some assistance, it will place quite a bit of strain upon the reserves of the city and the taxpayers of Annandale.
Will you check on that for us, Mr. Peterson?
Madam Chair, I'd be happy to check on that. Is there a bill file associated with that improvement that I could go to, or is that
last night? Anybody remember?
2607.
Madam Chair, Representative, I'll definitely check on it, and I'll get the information to the committee as soon as I can.
Thank you.
We appreciate it.
Yeah, no problem.
It raised a very serious concern last night. Representative Salt?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that particular project, the point, I think that oftentimes the analyses that might be going on would be at the physical level, that kind of way of trying to not create serial projects that are actually happening on top of each other where you'd physically tie up the town and that sort of thing. This was actually the financial problem that comes with the proximate load on their budget in a serial way. We have to fund this by this amount on this day, and then tomorrow we have to fund this at another amount, and then later on we've got other infrastructure plans across the city having nothing to do with DOT, and that financial load in that serial method just brought an inordinate amount of pressure to their financing. That doesn't mean that DOT has got to be the solution. It's just about the issue of, I think, trying to make sure that everybody has talked about how these things are going to layer against a, in this case, a reasonably small municipality. So.
Thank you, Representative Salt. Are there any other questions for Mr. Peterson? We did that last night. Thank you very much, Mr. Peterson. If you get back to us, we appreciate it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I will do that.
And as we go on with the meeting, there may be other questions about DOT projects, but they don't know it yet. Mr. Locasmo, will you come down? And we still have some issues with outstanding issues about what we heard in the proposals about DNR projects, and they were primarily with proposals we heard about parks and trails, and I have two maps with the state trails on them and not very many local trails on the maps, but it seemed to me that the local trails or the requests for money for the local trails or the county trails or some other kind of trail are connecting to the state trail in some ways, and the connections aren't there, but the requests for funding for various kinds of connections or with a local trail to a state trail, there needs to be a lot more connections than we have. And so did we do the easy things and now we're coming into the hard parts in order to get connected? Or help me out, Mr. Lockismo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Kent Lockismo, Director of Capital Investment for DNR. You do have in your packets one map showing just the authorized and developed state trails. There's 25 authorized trails, and you'll see in the you know, the solid colors are the ones that are developed, and the dashed lines are undeveloped. And there's another, you know, out of those undeveloped trails, there's 1,250 miles of right-of-way that would still need to be acquired before you develop those. So those are all works in progress. The other main thing that we've looked at as an agency is taking care of what we have and rehabilitating some of the trails that are nearing or past the end of their useful life, like the Cicada Trail we are in the process of doing. And there's also, as you know, we did rails to trails conversions was the easy way to start with trails. Then we were dealing with one landowner. Now, as we're dealing with some of these other alignments, it's not one landowner for acquisition of right-of-way. It's multiple landowners. So it takes much longer to do that. And we see requests come in that the committee has seen that are for, you know, the entire project. And our approach or our preferred method of dealing with trails would be to determine the route, do the acquisition, which may take a long time, or and then do the design, and then come in for the construction dollars. So it's easier to do that in a sequence like that. The what we've requested that's within the governor's bill were some of these connection areas. One was, and I don't believe that the committee heard bills on these specifically. One was a short segment, you know, it's a half mile segment in Bemidji at Clawson Avenue to connect the end of the bridge that was done to the Paul Bunyan Trail, a connection in Walker at Tower Hill to straighten out some issues there, one in St. Paul in the, on Gateway Trail, one in the Gitche-Gamie Trail in Lutzen. So those were the types of projects that we had within our request. The you know, in the, we've gotten a lot more funds in the past than we've been ready for, and I think people that present, there's a lot of different definitions of what shovel-ready means, and for us, shovel-ready, you should have the acquisition already taken care of because you could end up with a roadblock like we did at the Stagecoach Trail down by Rochester where there's a landowner that said no, and we don't have condemnation authority. We just use, you know, we just do willing sellers, so if that trail is going to be developed, it's going to have to be along a different alignment. The there are many local connections needed to do the last half a mile or whatever to get it into the city park from where the trail alignments are. And I think you've seen a bunch of those requests. You've also seen a lot of local requests to finish these state authorized trails. So I'm not exactly sure what information we can provide specifically on those, Madam Chair, but if there are specific questions, we can develop answers.
We don't have anything in our packets today. And what, Representative Hansen, help me out, does your committee hear Parks and Trails?
Madam Chair, why yes, we actually will be hearing some funding this afternoon through the LCCMR bill for connecting on trails and also some in-holding acquisitions on state parks, because there are properties within parks that still have private ownership as well. And I think Mr. Lockismo may remember a few years ago we did a had an analysis of trails that were authorized but had not been acquired, and then there were acquisitions that had not been developed, and then there were proposals that had been done but may have needed pieces in between for the connecting. And I think that might be what you were referring we would be getting in our packet. But there are authorized trails that aren't acquired, and there are acquired trails that aren't developed. Is that correct?
Mr. Lacasmo.
And Madam Chair, these were supposed to be delivered to your staff yesterday, and I have a few copies of this map that could be made copies of, but this shows the authorized and developed trails. So that may help. I apologize for that.
So, Madam Chair, back to your question. Yes, we will have some proposed, we will have a bill that will come out of committee today with some funding, not, you know, the target that you have, but it will have some funding for trails and parks.
And then we also have the legacy bill that's heard about trails also. And so maybe the entities that all have some funding for trails have to develop a conversation at least on and let the communities or let the people of the state know that who has what and how they can go to the right source. But certainly I would think in that the DNR would be the main leader on easements.
Well, Madam Chair, it's certainly on the state authorized trails, the department would be the entity that does the acquisition, and those would be in fee. We may do long-term easements, but generally I would think it's fee acquisition. The other thing I would add, Madam Chair, is that there's also an LCCMR bill includes trail projects that's, you know, under consideration by the legislature this year. So there are multiple sources of funding, as Representative Hansen has said, that provide dollars for trail.
But this committee would be in conflict with the committee on LCMR and DNR, or environment, and legacy. We don't want to all be doing the same trail, do we?
Well, Madam
what
Chair,
what's your advice, Mr. Lacasmo?
Well, Madam Chair, as you know, there's probably an insatiable appetite for trail funding. So, and I think, you know, there's multiple sources, and there are multiple projects. We certainly, if something gets funded by LCCMR, for example, and we don't know what that final amount is going to be. If it's funded there, obviously we would spend those dollars. If not, there's you know, there's another mile of that same trail that could be done with other funds.
And there's one or two people or three on this committee that don't have trails at all.
Really? We can change that.
Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I may be one of those trailless people. I'm going to go a little bit off topic, but this relates to a project we heard last night where they're working on a trail where they actually charge a fee to utilize the trail. Is there any restriction on our bonding funds in that case? And if that trail intersects with an approved state trail, is there any kind of interaction there? Because we don't charge fees for our state trails.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, that was a privately developed trail. I'm not sure if there were any bonding dollars on that or not. I don't believe so. That's a locally run, locally funded trail, and they provide the dollars. There have been discussions in the past about having a some type of a trail pass or some type of a way to generate other dollars. Those have not ever gained much traction. I'm not sure if that addressed your question.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Mr. Lacasmo. It does to an extent. So they can a local trail can do whatever it wants, basically. But can a local trail charge an access fee and receive bonding dollars, I guess, is kind of the bottom line question I'm trying to get answered.
Madam Chair and Representative Torkelson, I'm not, I guess I'm not positive of that answer. That may be an MMB question. I would believe that we would restrict that, and perhaps your council can answer.
Ms. Deason.
Madam Chair, Representative Torkelson, it is that is a question I would want to run by MMB, but in a general sense, a project that is state bond financed that raises revenue that can raise some issues. Usually, if I think in some cases we have specifically authorized in statute that revenue that's been generated that goes directly back into the project has been okay. I think the flood hazard mitigation program has something related to that for the impoundment areas where they can lease it out for grazing. I don't know if I might be misremembering that, but it is there is an issue whenever there is revenue raised by a project that's state bond financed, and it's not an automatic no, but there are issues.
And Representative Torkelson.
Well, no, thank you for that information. That's kind of what I was trying to work toward. You know, we like to approve projects that have chance of success rather than those that are going to get in trouble with MMB. So
right. And but Ms. Deason, can we clarify that it might be okay that the local trail got built and had a fee that has helped them up to this point? But then my question that you ask you to find out about, could they continue to charge if we appropriated money for it?
Madam Chair, I'm happy to talk with staff at MMB about the issue.
Okay. Since we don't mind that the trail has already started before we consider. And thank you, Representative Lilly, for offering your fee on that trail and your expertise now, because you know that trail and contributed.
Madam Chair, I did contribute to the fund.
And so that gives us committee buy-in.
Right.
Thank you. Any other questions on any topic that's before us and the DNR? Representative Lilly.
Madam Chair, just to throw in, which has kind of been mentioned, just Representative Hansen talked about multiple funds. So out of the, just to be clear, like the legacy fund, 40% of the Parks and Trails money the last couple of years has gone to DNR Parks and Trails. So, and then 40% to the Metro, and then 20% goes to Greater Minnesota Regional Parks and Trails, and then mostly to Representative Erdahl's district, I think.
Do you have anything else that'll help us in our deliberations? Any advice to give this committee about DNR projects that we're considering?
Madam Chair, we'd be happy to answer questions. As you know, our focus in recent years has been dealing with asset preservation, and that includes you know, buildings, roads and bridges, trails, all of those things. So that clearly has been the focus. And within the governor's budget, you'll see large request for asset preservation. And if that number is large enough, we would do the Sudan mine shaft project. And that needed language to be able to be a design-build project because it's a pretty unique construction. It's also the other thing that was unique in our request this year was the addressing the airport, our fire response at the Hibbing Airport, and the need to do an improvement on that ramp or parking area of that airport, and that was a $2 million request within that budget. Those are two of the new things that this committee hasn't seen before.
Okay. Anything else for DNR?
Thank you. I'll be around to answer.
Please stay around. Committee members, those were the outstanding questions that I thought were problems that we still have to consider. Do you have any that you would like to, any problem that still exists in your mind before we go on to the next step? Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I like what you did with the breaking down the Mighty Ducks and the HVAC grants into congressional district. I think that's a more accurate and reasonable way to look at all the appropriations is by congressional district. Too often we reaffirm the alleged rural-urban divide by looking at the projects as a metro greater Minnesota split. And I think if at the end of the day when the final bill is done, if you could break them all down into congressional districts, I think that would be a good way of looking at it, because the congressional districts are based on people rather than region.
And that's our ultimate purpose, is to invest in the people of Minnesota as well. All right. Members of the committee, you have just received a copy of the spreadsheet with the governor's recs on and with all the projects that we've heard before us. And we've also, I would like you to, in the bottom right-hand corner above the 327-2019 4:40 p.m., I would like you to write your name, because eventually these are going to come back to me. And I would like to know who's on the right-hand side of the sheet is a kind of a score sheet for opinions. And I would like to have you start to give me your opinions on this sheet by going through projects and recommending them for funding or opposing fund or not recommend them. And eventually, I would also like to receive your priorities, but I haven't determined exactly how many priorities at this time. But this is the idea. And by, I'm giving you a target also. And it's 845 million dollars. Up to 845 million dollars.
To how much?
$845 million. And we will have we will have more discussions leading up to when these are collected. But I think maybe they should, you should think about it and make preliminary pencil indications to yourselves by the probable meeting that will take place on Monday evening. And I didn't have that originally scheduled and didn't tell you about it earlier because I didn't know that we would probably have to have another meeting because of another committee's actions. And we have a considerable project that we have to weigh in on because the other committee's positive actions has an effect on our target as a whole, our target, which is what Mr. Lee told us about. And that meeting probably is going to be Monday night, but I don't know that for a fact. Because it just took place, the action of the other committee just took place last night. At the same time, we were having our action. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just so I understand, the DFL plan last week, I believe, was $1.5 billion for a bonding bill. And now you're saying we should go with 845. Is the other, the action by the other committee you're talking about, the difference between 1.5 billion and 845? Is that?
Some of it is, Representative Erdahl, but some of it is also respect for that we have to pay off the debt service. And some of it is, I would want you to have a little spare change. And some of it is, I would like to have a reserve fund. And some of it is that I haven't heard a thing from the outside, but I know that people that have higher positions than I often come and say, oh, you have to include this thing coming into a bill. And so I want to have a little walking around money, just like they have a little walking around money. And I don't want us to get tied into particular amounts of money at this point in time because this is our first try. And we haven't even, within ourselves, even I haven't picked 10 absolute projects that have to be in no matter what, or I can't leave here, or I can't face them. But every agency person that's here is sitting on the edge of their chairs hoping that their agency gets full funding. And we have to kind of have, and I know how you always, I'm following you, your model a little bit, and Representative Torkelson's model a little bit, and Representative Dorman's model a little bit, and Representative Prinky's model a little bit.
Oh boy, how are we getting there?
In that those were my bonding years. and I'm following that where the chair never told the whole story as they were walking around and receiving advice from people. And they were always cutting down a little bit. Well, I cut it down up front so that you can work with the full amounts that are on here for the things that you think are most important to you. And then we'll talk about what's most important with the committee after that. And I want to discuss it. And in fact, it's my plan to have, I haven't decided yet if it's five groups of four or four groups of five. But I want committee members to be in small groups for a short time, too, with your priority lists, and convince each other or share information. Now, all the information that you need, in case you were once tardy or once had to leave early or twice had to go out and have your bills heard in another committee, or were down with the flu, or down with the cold, or you had a sprained ankle, or something that kept you away from here. All the meetings are on the computer. All the audio is there. All the minutes is there. You have all the resources that we have at from committee to review on your own time when it's convenient for you, because I know you don't like to get up early and I know you don't like to stay after. But I do need your opinion before we go and before you offer them out publicly. You've got to think them through so you're sure of what's really important to you. Because what's important to you is going to be important to me. And I'm part of you. And our staff is going to be working as a team to develop the step that we're going to take between now and April 12th. And we want the most accurate information before us. Because it's an important, very, very important job. Representative
Erdahl. Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Again, the easiest thing to do is when you mentioned Representative Krenke to do his type of bill. But that wouldn't get us too far, so we'll go a little more than that. I would encourage in working on this that you do use pencils.
With the erasers.
With the erasers, yes. And I commend you, Representative Murphy, for your commitment, your dedication to, you know, trying to put out a process that involves everyone, is transparent, and gets this thing done. That said, you know, our basic problem here will be that I, you know, as the minority lead, still have no number. You know, we need to make sure that, you know, leadership, I think, in all levels of our caucuses be involved in this as well. I'm sure that 844, 845, whatever, is going to be too rich for most, if not all, of our caucus right now. It's, you know, I committed early on that I would, you know, try to work with you and you know, work with the majority to do a bill that could get 81 votes. And that is still my goal. But, you know, it's all that I've heard. I mean, we still have folks in the caucus saying, you know, we already did a bond bill. We don't need to do another one. And so there's that to deal with, and there's the fact, again, that I have no number. I would hope at some point, again, after involvement of leadership, that we do get there. And so my desire is to help you do this, but I know that it's going to be a much different number when we finally come to some type of conclusion.
Thank you for that advice, Representative Erdahl. Please, members of the Minority Caucus, remember that I used the term up to $845 million. Representative Torkelson, give me your advice.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. First, I have to confess that one of those bills that was dropped yesterday was a bill that had my name on it as lead author. And I'll tell you why. It's because I got a call yesterday morning from a member of that other body across the street that lives in that new building over there, asking me, requesting that I get this bill dropped and try to get a hearing. Of course, I told him I would, although I realize I'm not going to this year probably. But I bring that up because the action on that side of the street has been extremely limited.
I understand that.
They haven't been having hearings. They haven't been doing much of anything. And while, you know, I have the utmost respect for you and your work, I've been with you on that first legacy committee. I was noticing this morning how many legacy people we have with legacy history around this table. And you are, you are always fair and always, take in all opinions, and I appreciate that. But we on our side of the aisle are in a rather delicate position, I'm sure you understand, because as if we actively take part in assembling a large bill that our caucus has no position on, we're in a way endorsing the governor's position that we really don't endorse, that a large bonding bill this year is not something that we feel is appropriate. So I think what we as a, I'm going to recommend to the lead anyway, that we as members of the minority kind of sit down, now that you've kind of laid out what your plan is, that we kind of have a chance to think about that and react to it. I don't want to boycott your process, but at the same time I hope you understand that there is a real conflict here for us. And I liken assembling a bonding bill to, I like to do jigsaw puzzles, I have to confess. But when I do a jigsaw puzzle on the table, it's just a matter of finding the right piece to go in the right spot. When you're assembling a bonding bill, it's like those pieces are constantly changing size and shape, and even the size of the puzzle changes from day to day. So you just don't, it's really hard to put it together. And there comes that moment in time when you do have to say, I'm going to jam these pieces in here and we're going to be done, but it's kind of a group decision. It's not just your decision or my decision. So I hope you understand that we have some resistance to endorsing a large bonding bill this year. And we have to decide if taking part in this process is an endorsement of that or not and how we might approach it. So I'm throwing up the caution flag, Madam Chair. Thank you for your hard work.
Thank you very much, and I appreciate that. And I invite you to have a meeting with your lead, with our lead, Minority Lead Erdahl. And I always think of you as former chair also, and so you can call your people together, and if you're calling the people together and you want further conversation with me, I will willingly come. If you want me to bring any of our caucus, I will do that. But this is a committee of the House of Representatives. We all represent pretty much the same number of Minnesotans that know that the governor's what the governor's proposal is, and know what our target is. And they know that there are people down here that came before us to ask for a consideration of their projects. And as a committee, we have to make serious decisions, and the best decisions that help the most Minnesotans in their housing, in their communities, in their schools, in every part of their lives and in every part of Minnesota. And we have to deliver something to them, or not, if that's the choice. But it is the responsibility of this committee to get the best product delivered to the next step, which is Ways and Means, for consideration by the whole House of Representatives. And I'm hopeful that through an open process with the representatives of the people here, as well as a strong voice from the minority and strong listening skills from the majority, that we will have a product. And I accept caution, but we must move forward with every meeting we have. So please come to the meetings, and please make your statements and keep giving us advice along the way. Representative Dean.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just want to commend you on setting forward a process that allows each of us as committee members to not just talk about the projects that we value, but also what the value of those projects are. I mean, I understand the minority concern about a target dollar amount, but at the same time, we have some projects that are in the neighborhood of, you know, $150 million or $117 million, which is very different than a $2 million project. And as we go through an exercise of sort of allocating dollars, we also talk about, you know, a project that's really, really expensive. We have to spend a lot of money to sort of voice that that's a priority. And I think that ultimately by all of us collectively doing this, what it does is it doesn't say that we think the bonding bill should be this dollar amount. What it does say is we think that these are the projects of value that should be included in a bonding bill. You know, you might have $1.6 billion, you might have $400 million. But without an exercise of prioritizing projects, I think it's really, really important that we as committee, I mean, this is my seventh year on the committee. I came in, I was on this committee, and I've seen it done many, many ways, and I've never seen it done like this. You know, I've seen it done where, you know, we talk to the chairs about the projects we think are important, and we hope that in the end, when we see a bonding bill come out from the chair, it includes our project. And if it doesn't, we hem and haw. And if it does, we're like excited and trying to make sure it stays in because we know what happens towards the end of the session. Some projects stay and some projects go. But I think with having something that we all were involved in sort of setting priorities, I think that helps us and you as the chair when it comes time to negotiation, when it comes time to talking about which projects are critical. You know, we just saw a project the other day for a short track of rail. I mean, I can tell you right now, there's not a whole lot of direct benefit to my district for that several million dollars for rail line. But at the same time, I know it's important for that part of the state. And if it's important for that part of the state, it's important for all of the people in the state of Minnesota. So I just, again, I want to commend you on this, and I would just encourage all of us on the committee, whether we're in the majority or the minority, to actually participate in this exercise, because I think it's a good exercise of each of us individually thinking about those projects that are critical. And I know that we're probably going to favor the projects in our district, I mean, we were elected by the voters to come here and represent them, and I think we all need to do that. But beyond that, we need to think about, you know, the greater good of the state, and I'm just excited to spend some time this weekend with this and see if I get to 845 or if I only get to 750. Or 200. But again, it's not about setting what the bonding bill budget or target is. It's about talking about the projects that we believe should be on a priority of projects that should be funded, regardless of where the bonding bill ends up being at the end. Because if we don't talk about what we think are priorities, then you don't have a barometer from us on what we think the priority should be. Whether or not we end up at, you know, I hope we end up closer to at least 450, or whether we end up at $1.6 billion. So I think that this is, I mean, for all you new, you know, capital investment committee members, this is a whole new way of doing it, and I'm super excited about it.
Thank you, Representative Dean. Representative Wolgamott.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Earlier you mentioned that we were meeting on Monday, and you referenced a committee and a action taken by a committee. I'm wondering if at this time, if you're able to tell us what committee that is and what action they took so that we can understand what's going on.
Sure. Ms. Nash. Oh.
Run faster.
Sorry, I'm sorry.
I'm hobbling.
You're picking out a
word on that.
Yeah, come on, man. What are you doing?
That's how I roll.
And if he wants to know what committee met last night, that has an effect on our committee on Monday.
It was the jobs committee.
Jobs. And what did they do that impacts us?
The bill is House filed.
The bill is House filed 1216. And the motion was to send it to capital investment because it's laying out a new footprint for the downtown area of a major northeast Minnesota city.
So we'll be hearing that bill on Monday.
That's my understanding from what Ms. Nash reported.
Thank you.
And we had already had a room reserved in case we hadn't finished up our hearings last night, or in case this had to wait for printing, but it didn't have to wait for printing, so we were able to proceed with
it.
Any other advice from the committee members? Representative Torkelson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Does that mean that I and I don't know who my six companions are that turned in bills yesterday, do we get to have hearings too?
If it was the will of the committee, but I said no. But
you can't say no to the jobs committee. I'm sorry, Madam Chair. I think reveals just how challenging your work is and how much the size and shape of the puzzle changes every day.
And that, exactly, and that's a very good example in that sense. And if I heard from the will of the committee that they wanted to hear the six new projects, we would fit it in.
2 minutes each, Madam Chair.
But they don't get on this worksheet. They don't get on this sheet that we were going to start today. And there's some things on this sheet that probably aren't ready for until next year, too. And we can sort that out from how much you remember about the projects and so on. But I'm really excited about hearing other opinions. Representative Juergens?
Thank you, Madam Chair. As long as we have everyone here with their new yellow spreadsheets, if I could have everybody turn to page 6, line 176. The bill that we heard last night, the bill was for $2,550,000, but as we learned last night, that's $1 million is all that is bondable. So if you could make that change.
What line?
Line 176 on page 6 of 12. Change $2,550,000 to $1 million. And that's all. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that correction. And okay, under turn to page the deed page, which is I have another correction. Page 12. 9 of 12. 9 of 12.
Money from the Westlake Hall workstation.
Okay, grants to political subdivisions. Line 262. No? Well, 262 is on the other. 261A. Or 261. 1.5.
Oh, we're adding.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. 261, line 261.5.
City of Duluth.
Grand Rapids Arena.
How much?
Representative Lehman.
It was 5 point something. I don't have the exact number right now. I just noticed that it's missing on the list.
Mr. Lee, do you remember? 5 point what?
House file 1621.
House file 1621. And this sum is will be here soon. $5,488.
Which Grand Rapids is
488.
5,488.
If there's any other errors that are brought to our attention, Ms. Nash will forward them to you on the computer, on the email. Representative Erdahl.
Thank you. And page 9, line 254, I don't remember what it is, but I did have a reduction on Annandale to, I believe, like the $4.5 million range. You can write that down from last night? 4.753. Our very efficient vice chair had that.
4.753?
Yeah. And 4.753. And, Madam Chair, while I got the mic here.
Yes.
I'd like to recognize Representative Dean for, I think, some good comments on the process here. But there are various reasons why it gets done various ways, and every year is a little bit different. And I think it would be particularly interesting today. I believe that the Senate is coming out with their targets, and when we see what their bonding target is, if it exists, it will, and if it doesn't exist today, it doesn't mean it doesn't exist later in dealing with the Senate. But it will provide us, I think, with some guideposts to what we are doing.
Thank you for that. Is there anyone else on the committee? No. Representative Lilly.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I just challenge my friends across the aisle to just consider one item on the agenda, or for example the HEPR at the University of Minnesota. I've heard numbers thrown around like 200 or 400 million, and it just if we were to to do that alone, it would be a substantial amount or percentage of the number that I've heard mentioned here today, the 200 or 400. And I just, you know, it's hard when you tour these buildings, you get attached and you realize the problem, and it's our, you know, I mean, that's just one example. So it just, you know, it's not something I benefit directly as a member. It's not something, you know, but it just seems like it's the right thing for Minnesota that our, you know, we're protecting our assets. So it just, you know, these numbers, I get that they're political, but to me it's kind of sad too, because I, you know, I think we have this great opportunity being on this committee and being a legislator to improve our state. And so when I hear the 200 and 400, I get it's negotiation. I totally understand. I've been here a while. So, but it's just sad to me because the need is so big and real. And, again, it doesn't help me directly, but I just think if we're building a better Minnesota, I sure hope you bring back a request for bigger numbers.
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And well, first comment, remember that traditionally this is not a bonding year. This is $260 million in the first year of the biennium usually. And but if you recall past comments that I've made in here, if I were to have my way and there were money available, we would put it into three or four large buckets, you know, HEPR being one of them, probably PFA, you know, roads and bridges, those types of things. So at least we may be in agreement on some of what I would like to see done.
On page six, number 183.5, or point 183.5, yes. Please write in Chanhassen, Lyman Boulevard, House File 2028, $728,000. Members of the audience, you have a paper, and you may also at some time be called to for your opinions of priority items. But you're only going to have the opportunity to have this paper once. And you can't reproduce at your own costs or anything. This was given to you today. And your name should be in the bottom right-hand corner of this paper, of your paper, too, in case you ever want to share it with us. You came. You have the reward of participating. You offered yourselves up to give us advice, and there may be another opportunity for that at a later time. But members of the committee, in light of what Representative Erdahl said, our leadership in the House of Representatives gave us a target. The people of Minnesota know what that target is. And if we have to, with our target of the $1.6 billion, we have to be the only leaders on that. I am accepting in your behalf the responsibility to hear from Minnesota and deliver back to Minnesota. The governor of the state, his recommendations are in here. And that's where we are today as we start this new journey to reach the end for April 12th. And we can do it. And we have a target. And if the other body has a different way of getting to April 12th, that's fine. But right now, we should be thinking of the opportunities of prioritization of the projects that have been referred to us by the people of our districts, by our colleagues that have introduced bills, and by the governor from his listening sessions across one Minnesota. We know that Minnesota values have been expressed, and we know what those values are. And they are in this document. And it is up to us to clasp and report back to the people. So walk with me along the way. And discuss it among yourselves. And we will come through and start again Monday. Representative Erdahl was absolutely right. Use pencil.
I have one for you.
This meeting is adjourned.